Afternoon and welcome to Citizens July 9th, 2024 Actuarial and Underwriting Committee meeting that is publicly noticed in the Florida Administrative Register to convene immediately following the Finance and Investment Committee meeting. It is recorded with transcribed minutes available on our website. For those attending today's session through the public link, you are automatically in listen-only mode. Chair Baruff, we have no speaker requests for today's meeting. I'll proceed with roll call.
Please.
Chair Baruff.
Here.
Governor Becksmith. Governor Thomas.
Here.
Governor Spotswood.
Here.
Fred Strauss.
Here.
Chairman, you have a quorum.
Thank you. Is there minutes that we need to adopt from the last meeting? Yep, approval of prior meetings. Somebody make a motion.
So moved. Second.
Minutes are approved. And welcome up, Mr. Adams.
Thank you, Chairman and committee members. I have two items that I need to go over today. The first one we'll go over is the product updates, and these are included in your package, so I'm not going to go into a lot of detail. I do want to spend a few minutes talking about the roof covering exclusion specific to commercial. Commercial underwriting has recently been receiving requests to insure buildings where the roof age and or condition do not meet our eligibility requirements. The risks were previously able to find coverage, but the hardening market has left a gap, leaving buildings uninsurable. To address this issue, staff proposes introducing a roof covering exclusion to be used only in our commercial line products. Benefits include providing insurance for those who are unable to obtain coverage during roof replacement, allowing citizens to limit loss exposure, and supporting the depopulation of risks once that roof is replaced. Staff proposes this exclusion will only be applied to risks that do not meet eligibility requirements for roof age and or condition that have a fully executed roof replacement contract with proof of down payment.
Okay.
The roof replacement must be completed within the new business policy term or the policy will be non-renewed.
Okay, so I think everybody understands what you said, but I'm gonna dumb it down for those of us that are a little slower.
All right.
So you want to insure people that are in the midst of replacing their roofs and exclude the roof from the insurance.
Correct.
Until it's paid, and then then they have to make a down payment with the roofer in order to be insured?
That is correct.
Okay.
So what has happened today is we're getting pressure to write these exposures.
I think it's a legitimate problem. I think as long as I just don't know where the rubber's going to meet the road when you've got a situation where you make that policy, storm comes along, the roof isn't put in yet, but it's half put in, and that half gets damaged. I mean, you know, you're talking a timing sequence, then where are we is on the exposure level if half the roof is done and then it gets blown off, but do we pay for anything?
So the way that we're setting this up with this endorsement is that each building that does not meet the eligibility standards would be eligible for this roof exclusion. Now, we're going to require them to submit a application. Excuse me. They're going to have to submit a contract for having the roof replaced showing money down. If there are multiple buildings, as the buildings are, the roofs are replaced, they can then write them or remove that endorsement, so to speak.
Okay.
And that will increase the coverage. They'll have to pay the additional premium. When that's paid,
so
then claims would pay that loss.
On a certified basis.
Correct. Okay. Correct.
So we're getting into the business of certifying the proper installation of a roof?
No. So okay. Once the roof has been completed,
yes,
right, by a licensed roofing contractor, at that point, we would consider that roof age to be zero, brand new.
Right.
We would remove that endorsement, and it would be eligible for coverage. And the way it would work is the value of that roof would be added back to that building.
But until fully done and installed, we take zero responsibility for it.
That's what this endorsement would do, is limit our exposure.
So my initial question was, if it happens in the middle of a storm, doesn't matter, we're not paying anything.
If the roofs have not been complacent and the endorsement removed, we would pay zero for the roof.
For the roof.
Or any resulting damage from the storm.
Because of the roof failure.
Correct.
Okay. So you're asking this. It's an action item for tomorrow, obviously.
Right. That's part of the product updates. That is one of them.
Okay. How many are there?
There's a handful. I don't think I really need to go into any detail of the others. The majority of them are just updates, and then we have some statutory requirements that we have to do.
Well, the statutory requirements, unless the board has any issues that you want to discuss on statutory requirements, I think that's a given.
Yeah.
Pretty much have to follow the law.
All right.
So is there the board have any questions on this the biggest twist is the roof thing that we're going to offer insurance for in between roof repairs. Does anybody have any questions on that? Nope. Or comments? Okay. Yes, sir.
Is there a better solution that you can suggest? I mean, putting us in a position of determining what other damage was caused by the roof not being repaired seems like an impossible position to be in to me. So it just seems like you're going to create a lot of argument down the road with this kind of provision.
Yeah, this could boomerang where we obviously are trying to do a good thing to fill a breach in the coverage for other people, and then it could give us a black eye later.
So it would basically be the ensuing water damage, right? So if the roof covering's not there, any water that got into the building otherwise be covered would not. So the physical structure of the building, windows, doors, any of that type of thing, there would still be coverage for that, just like the policy outlined.
This is what's going to happen. The finger pointing starts. No, it came through the window. No, it came through the roof.
Exactly.
I disagree with you. It came through the window, so you got to cover me. You got to pay. No, it came through the roof. We don't have to pay. That's what's going to happen.
I guess what I'm asking is there a brighter line to be drawn by having people actually know beforehand when the lifetime of the roof is coming up and they need to make repairs or have a report done or something so that people know beforehand, and there's a bright line there that roof has been in place for 10 years or 20 years, you're obligated to do something. And
so
I think that's what we've been operating on for years, which is inspecting roofs and say, hey, if you don't get a new one. This is a little bit of a different twist. We're actually going to take roofs that we know are bad,
right,
exclude them, and then hope in 12 months they fix them.
So each insurance
the problem comes in exactly the point that you made. Mm-hmm. When you're going to get into this argument is where did the water come from? And we're going to get caught in the middle. It's the same similar situation as we've had for years where you have wind and flood water. Then the argument gets, well, was that wind damage or did the flood create the damage? And right, we end up rolling over because you just can't slice that so thinly.
Yeah.
But I think that's a valid point, but I don't know how to make that square.
If I could ask, I'm not, this is an awfully narrow niche we're talking about, people whose roofs don't already qualify, but who have a contract and have made a down payment. So is the idea that this is a market, are these people who've come to us for insurance and we've turned them down because of the condition of their roof, and this is an opportunity for them to address why we turned them down? Or is the market turning them down and they have nowhere else to go, so they're coming to us?
The second. So before the hardening of the commercial market, there were exceptions like this being made. So each insurance company has their own roofing standards, right? And the agents that sell to those carriers, they know what they are. And then they would know from a condo owners group, they would know what they need to do from a roofing perspective. What we are trying to do is limit citizens' exposure when we are pressured to write these types of risks.
So the way to really limit the exposure would be not to write it at all, obviously. But that's what I was trying to figure out. Is it someone we've turned down or someone the market's turned down that can't get insurance otherwise?
I would say it would be the market.
Do we have any – it is such a niche of people, bad roofs, declined by private insurer, have a contract that have made a down payment, which presumably they're going to do that to satisfy our requirements. It's not like – are we talking about – 5 commercial buildings or 5 million commercial buildings that are going to fit within this niche?
Well, traditionally, we haven't seen a significant, huge volume. But what has happened to us traditionally is insured says, we're going to make these repairs to the roof, blah, 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 please write us. They wait until the hurricane season comes to an end to evaluate if they're going to write them or not, and then we just non-renew them. If the hurricane did hit, Citizens would have been on the hook without this endorsement to replace that roof.
Presumably we wouldn't have written it though, right? If it didn't meet our standards for age or condition.
We get a lot of pressure to write some of these that are ineligible in the marketplace.
I get it.
But pressure doesn't mean you write them.
We write some of them that otherwise do not meet our standards.
What I've seen is a concerted, since we've gotten bigger and bigger into the commercial business over the last 18 months, big market share. What I've seen is you've got condominium associations with 200-400 members. That gets the people in Tallahassee's attention. But the political pressure starts getting pressure on us to write these uninsurable buildings because these are well-organized condominium associations. Correct me if I'm wrong.
That's correct.
Some of them in pretty expensive buildings. And all of a sudden we're picking up the pieces. And it sounds good when it's working, but it's going to clean our clock when it's not.
Given the practical pressure to write this.
I
guess I'm going to follow up on that and ask what our limit is for that kind of building. For a building that type that has 200 condominiums, what's our limit? If that's a single building, what's the limit of insurance we can write for that building?
We can write. We're not limited by the limit of insurance for a residential condo. So whatever value. I mean, we write some that are $50, $60, $80, $100 million.
It's... just to finish a thought and then please Governor Thomas, but this insurance business, the commercial side of the business, is, as you've seen on the charts, grown exponentially over the last 24 months. So our exposure is significant because one building is $100 million, just one. And when we're insuring whole coastlines worth of buildings, as opposed to single family homes all over the state, the exposure is phenomenally worse. And I don't know, at some point tomorrow, I'll bring it up to Mr. Donovan, who's the actuary that does this stuff, but it's beginning to be a concern to this board member. Mr. Thomas.
So to make sure I understand, Jay, so given the practical realities, the pressure we face, are we talking about the dichotomy here is we write these policies without the exclusion, we write them with the exclusion?
Well, today we don't have the exclusion.
I'm saying, that, yes. If we approve it. So because it's very different. If the dichotomy is we don't write the business at all, or we write it with the exclusion, then the exclusion is actually increasing our exposure because we're writing policies we wouldn't otherwise write. But what you're telling me is in practice, that's not the choice here. Even though the roofs don't meet our standards, in practice, we're writing the business now.
We are writing some of them, yes.
And so the idea here is, as most exclusions are should do, because we're writing it otherwise, this is actually intended to limit our exposure on this, on the this area.
Correct. Yes. Okay. Correct. And what we're trying to help do is rehabilitate these so they can be taken out, right? So we have had some commercial takeouts this year. When there's a brand new roof on the building, it makes that building more attractive in the market.
If they complete the repair during the first year of the policy term, are they eligible for renewal, or or is it just simply an expectation the market will now take them out? Or,
well, they would be eligible for a renewal,
right?
Right, if they met the objective of doing that within the policy term.
So it's a stopgap that hopefully results in them going elsewhere.
Hopefully,
yeah. Okay,
but as long, if I may add to your comment, which is the right comment. But the idea that we're going, when we get to renewal, that our prices are going to be more competitive. They in the commercial markets, they have to also be within 20% for them to be forced out.
I don't think that's part of, we don't have, it
is. It doesn't apply.
Okay, yeah, we do.
It does.
What I will say though, on these buildings that are A rated, so anything over $10 million, I believe our rate is actuarially sound for the A rate. So those buildings are probably equally priced to what's in the market, maybe higher.
Okay. Thank you. I'm good.
Any other questions?
So you need...
The
action item is that plus other pieces.
Right.
When you quickly go through the simple pieces, obviously not the statutory pieces.
Sure.
we've already discussed that we're going to approve the statutory piece.
So in the commercial lines, we're going to make some CSP code updates. And those are really just clarifications of what we're writing and gives us a better data feed in the future. In our commercial non-residential multi-peril, we were not doing, we were doing our own inspections of those buildings. And what we want to do is require an appraisal be submitted on those so that we get the proper valuation to line up with the rest of our commercial business. And the rest of them are the statutory changes.
Okay. Board will entertain a motion to approve the action item as read.
So moved.
Second.
All those in favor, I signify aye.
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 Motion carries. Thank you.
All right. Our second item is our business process outsourcing. And I know, Chairman, you had some pretty significant questions. And I apologize out of the gate that this action item is not written very well. It is a little confusing. Stephen and I had to kind of dig into it, but I'm going to try to explain what's going on here. First and foremost, business process outsourcing is underwriting from a vendor perspective, just like independent adjusters are on the claim side. We don't have enough staff to handle all of the underwriting transactions. So the high volume, low severity type transactions, we push out to the BPO vendor to allow them to do that. We entered into a contract with them in 2018. And here's where things get a little bit confusing. We had a contract for a base term of 5 years. The first renewal for 3 years, the second renewal for 2 years, for a total of 10 years. We had that came to a total of $35.6 million. So in the first five-year term, it was a little over $19 million. The renewal for the 3 years was $9.6 million. And then the final two-year renewal was $6.6 million. We came back to the board in December of 2022, and we asked to aggregate the entire contract amount to be able to be spent in the current term. And the reason that the current term was inadequate was when this contract was taken out, Citizens had 450 to 500,000 policies. At that time, nobody thought we were going to rise up to this 1.2, 1.3 million as we've been vacillating around for the last couple of years. When we also came to the board and asked for the aggregation, we could see that we were going to have a shortfall in that first 5 years. And we asked to increase that by an additional $10 million, which gave us authority of $45,933,107 that we could spend through March of 2025. Now, what we're asking for today is we are at the end of that first five-year renewal term, and we want to invoke the next renewal option, which is for 3 years. We're asking for $28,518,476 to carry us for the next 3 years, which is a total spend of $74.45 million. Nothing has changed in our contract. Our rates have increased 2.25% on average year over year of the contract as we've gone through. All the terms and conditions are the exact same. The only thing that's different as to why we're asking for additional monies is we've purely sent more transactions to them than we ever anticipated. In addition to the underwriting volume going up so high, we also have had some things that we undertook, such as inspections. We did 150,000 inspections, and somebody had to review that, put it in the file, and make a decision, yay or nay. In 2023, we did 300,000, and this year we're going to do 400,000. We had a statutory requirement for flood, where we had to make sure that all the policies that were required to have flood, and that continues to build up over the coming years. And then they also did a primary, non-primary confirmation, which has to do with how we rate those policies. So we have to look at those and make sure that we understand the ones that are homesteaded versus the ones that are not. Again, all of those projects were not anticipated when we took this contract out in 2018. So the ask is that what we do today is agree to allow us to invoke the next three-year renewal term and increased the value of the contract to a total of $74.4 million.
Mr. Chair, can I ask a quick question?
Please, Governor.
Is this a on a per transaction basis we're paying? So as policy counts theoretically go down, the spend will go down. It's not that we're just spending $27 million.
That is correct. Years.
It's hypothetically saying policy count stays the same, workload stays the same. This is what we're expecting to spend.
That's correct. And our forecast is based on what our actuaries use. So we're using those numbers in budget. We use them to figure out how many claims we're going to get, how many underwriting policies we're going to have, and those types of things. So it is all transaction-based.
Other comments? I have a comment. Are each of these decisions being made by a human being?
No. That's
where I was leading.
Yes, sir.
In the real world of business, if you got computers making decisions, the bigger the volume, the cheaper the price.
Correct. So we are sending, is it about 30% on average?
Of the inspections?
No, the auto underwriting.
Yeah, about 30%.
So about 30% of all policies that come into Citizens are going through a straight-through automated underwriting processing. And then we also have straight-to-file inspection reports.
But we're hiring an outside contractor for 70-some-odd million dollars to do the policies we send them, right?
Correct.
My question is, what is percentage of the policies that we send them are being done by computer and being underwritten as such, and what percentage is being touched by a human person?
Yeah. For the record, my name is Stephen Mostello, Vice President of Underwriting. So what we try to send the vendors are what we would consider to be high volume, low complexity type.
Right. You're sending the simple stuff.
We're trying. Yes, that's our goal.
Okay, and my question is strictly very simple. You're sending the simple stuff. Is what Mr. Adams sent 30% is being computer underwritten. How much that's internally into the total policy count that we have?
That's correct.
Of the stuff that we're sending to the $74 million contractor, what percentage of his policies are being touched by a human, and what percentage is being done by a computer?
From the vendor standpoint, I would assume the mass majority is being touched by you,
by
a person.
Okay, we don't know that fact. We don't know what percentage of the policies we're sending them are being touched by a human being and underwritten by a human being, because touching it and feeding it into a computer doesn't count to me.
So it's all being done in Citizen's system.
Okay.
Okay. We control what goes through the auto underwriting process. The vendors have no capacity to do that. So if we send them a piece of work, they have to physically go in the system and process that to get it released to the policyholder.
Okay. I guess we're going around. I'm not articulating my questions complete and simple. You are the determining factor what policy this vendor gets to underwrite.
Correct.
You send it to them. How many of those policies are being underwritten by a computer, though they have to open it and move it to the next step? Who's doing the underwriting? Is a person doing the underwriting, or is the computer doing the underwriting?
It is people doing the underwriting through the vendor, just like we would at Citizens.
Yeah, that counters what he was saying a little earlier. We thought the vast majority were simple and being underwritten by a computer. We don't know that. You do not know how many they're being underwritten by computers and how many by people.
We have no reason to believe that what we're sending them, it does require a touch by an underwriter. And it's by a transaction type. So we have different transaction types that we send the vendor. And those items that we send them require some touch, some review by manual underwriter.
Okay.
So
the 30% that's being underwritten by computers is in our internal that we're
getting? That is on our side of the
process.
Yeah. So Correct. Think about it like this. You get this book of business or these policies that come in.
Yeah.
The computer says, okay, I can take these and underwrite them. And then what's left, part of it is underwritten by staff. Part of it is underwritten by the vendor.
This contractor and vendor that you're proposing.
Correct. And what we do is we segment the easier stuff and the volume to send to that vendor. And we try to take the more difficult stuff that needs to be underwritten.
And you're sure that they're underwriting it with a person? Because I'm looking about overhead and cost. That's all I care about. It's yes. saving $74 million.
Yes, because we only have one policy system, and those vendors are signing into our policy system. So we just push the work under their queue, and then they take people and assign it to, they do the work and send it back.
Okay. That answers the question. So there's really no cost savings with AI and all the other things that we keep reading about in the newspaper.
We are leveraging that in a 30% that
internally.
We're auto underwriting. Internally, yes, sir.
But not externally.
Correct.
Why not?
Because we've determined that a human needs to look at that stuff.
So you've determined that what you're subcontracting out is essentially has to be touched by a person.
Today it does, correct.
Okay, all right. I'm done querying you.
No problem. So we would obviously, this would also be a consent item for tomorrow. We would need a vote to carry this forward.
Board have any questions? Any governors have any questions or comments?
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
The only the hope would be, though, and I'm following exactly the question and answers there, that 30% with other artificial intelligence that we talk about, hopefully over time, that number grows. And the need for spending these extra dollars for out there, maybe it grows to 40%. And that extra 10 basis points could save us millions of dollars.
Right.
That's what we're getting. Thank you.
So this contract is still back to the comment made by the governor. It go up and down depending on actual policy. So we're not stuck with the $24 million additional spend.
That's
You're
correct.
Basing it on what you think might be there. But if our policy count and our depopulation occurs at the end of the year like we normally do,
right.
we could find that we're not spending the money. I'd like a report on that. In when's our meeting in the first after the first of the year? Is there a January or March meeting? March. I'd like a report in March on how we did against the contract we're approving or
all right.
proposing to approve.
Barbara, can you put the slide up?
We don't need a slide now. I'd rather see it in real time.
I just want to show you how we have arrived at where we are, and it shows how we're burning through.
I do not question your staff is right. incredibly competent,
okay.
and I am sure. I just want to see actual against. I do the same thing. I budget, and
yep.
then I do an actual. I want to see what the actual looks like in March. That's all.
Gotcha.
I do not doubt your numbers for 1 second.
All right. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. What else?
Just to be clear, are we okay to move this to the board tomorrow?
Yeah. Is there a board member who will make a motion to approve moving forward with this item?
Moved.
Favor saying aye.
Thank you.
Aye.
Okay. Is there any new business? I don't think so. This meeting's adjourned, and we're going to rock right.